This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Jeff Schwartz, former NFL offensive lineman, works for Fox Sports. We will talk to him about some NFL, some college football, how he uses his knowledge of the offensive line to handicap these teams. Don't spend a lot of time talking offensive line, so it's always quarterbacks and defense. It'll be good to get his perspective on how he integrates that into his handicapping. But before we do that, let's get to some baseball. It was nice to have it back. Boy, Friday took forever to get here when you had the Derby on Monday, All-Star game on Tuesday, which I like. And between Tuesday night, and if you're not into the All-Star game, you're not into the Derby. That is a long week without baseball. We're used to it every night and scoreboard watching and just all the different things. And then nothing Wednesday, nothing Thursday. And the Thursday was really the killer because usually, at least in past years, you get a handful of games, a little sprinkling of games on Thursday, where at least you had something. But this year, nothing Wednesday, nothing Thursday, and then nothing until we had a Friday afternoon game, and then the Friday night games that came back. We'll touch on some of these pennant races. We'll get to the Yankees, but just quickly, the Astros were 10 games behind the Mariners, not in late April or early May or mid-May. On June 19th, they were 10 games out, and they are now dead even. They won the first two games of that series. Seattle won a game on Sunday. It desperately needed to save face and just not keep themselves in it because they would have only been two back, but just a unbelievable surge by the Astros, an incredible downfall by the Mariners. Just can't hit. They strike out a million times. I can't remember a team. I mean, wiping out a 10-game lead is very hard. Wiping out a 10-game lead in a month is almost impossible when you think about days off and eventually, hey, one team's going to lose games, the other team's going to win games. A month to wipe out 10 games is basically unheard of. But the Astros did it, and they are now in position where I would think they win that division. Rangers only five back in the loss column. They are just creeping around, hanging around, and that brings us to the Orioles and the Yankees because the Rangers did win a game on Sunday, so they salvaged that. Third game as Baltimore won two out of three. The Yankees lose two out of three. And the Yankees won Friday night. Good win. Cole looked like good. He's starting to look like Cole again. Good stuff. Strikeouts. They win a comfortable game Friday. You figure, all right, maybe the time off. Good series against Baltimore. Win a game on Friday. Maybe the Yankees are starting to get them their sea legs about them. Not the case. They get buried on Saturday. They get buried on Sunday. Arozarena's hitting home runs all over the ballpark. Arozarena's like Devers. Arozarena absolutely owns the Yankees, and there was word the Rays are interested in trading him. The Yankees should try to trade for him, if nothing else, to stop having to face him, as the Yankees were just completely – I mean, it's only two games, but this is a month now. 10-21 over the last 31 games. This is just not a good baseball team. It's Judge, it's Soto, and it's a bunch of minor leaguers around that with Austin Wells hitting cleanup. And think about that. This is a sport with no salary cap. The Yankees are worth $7.5 billion. No limit on who you can buy, no limit on who you can sign, and they have Austin Wells hitting cleanup. It's just ridiculous, and they better make some moves. I know all these teams need moves, and it's a seller's market because, hey, you can if you're one of these handful of teams, and there's not that many, who has a Brent Rooker on the A's, who, by the way, is hitting 295 with 22 homers, just incredible under-the-radar season, 295 in today's climate. It's like hitting 400, basically. Nobody hits 295 anymore. But if you have one of these guys, Rooker, somebody on the Rockies, McMahon, or somebody on the White Sox, Luis Robert, you can ask for the moon and the stars because there's so many teams buying. You have a week to the deadline where you can say, hey, if you want to buy them early, you're going to overpay. So you can hold your cards here, and the negotiating power is all in the lap of the teams that are selling, the Marlins, the Rockies, the White Sox, the Blue Jays eventually. There's not that many teams out of it with the extra wild card. But if you're the Yankees, the time is now. You can't just keep going another 10 days. You can't just, all right, we'll see what we need at the deadline. You need stuff now. You need to shore up this lineup now. You need a bat. You need a relief. You need a lot of stuff. And I don't even know if that's going to save you because the rotation is not good right now. Cortez is one of the more overrated pitchers in baseball. Stroman stinks. Rodon stinks. The pitching, they're just not that good of a team. I mean, they're just not that good of a team. Now, they're only three behind Baltimore, two in the loss column. Baltimore, it feels like Baltimore should be ahead by more, but Baltimore's got issues with their pitching too, but Baltimore does have the better team, and they are minus 135, the Orioles are, to win the division right now. So it's now or never for the Yankees, and it sounds like Stanton's close, running the bases. We'll see. You know how those things go. I don't think he's played any rehab games, so he can't be that close. But you don't have any more time. I mean, you don't, and they will play. This is a very important game. They play Monday afternoon against the Rays, a wraparound series. Mets and Marlins also play a wraparound series, I think, because the Friday start, they're trying to fit in these four game schedules. You don't see a lot of series that start on Friday and end on Monday. It is very unusual. Yankees -155. Rodon is on the mound against Littell. They need this game. I don't want to say they desperately need it. It's July 22nd. And there's no must win game July 22nd, but this is an important game. You can't losing three out of four after the bad streak to end the first half, despite the series in Baltimore. This is an important game for the Yankees to just get the split and start to maybe buy yourself the time to play better baseball. I don't see a path other than some major moves or some of these guys just getting out of their funk. Like, I mean, Volpe does nothing anymore. Verdugo does nothing. They're just not that good of a team. I don't know what the answers are, but for the Yankees, you have to make moves and make them soon. After that, you get two against the Mets, your home, three in Fenway, which is never easy, and then three games in Philly, Blue Jays, Angels. So schedule's not easy coming up. Mets, Red Sox, Phillies. I mean, those are not easy games. You need bats. You need players because this team just can't hit. And I was listening to the game. I was watching the game Sunday. The Yankees are down 5-0. Can't score a run. Didn't score any runs on Saturday. I know they got one or two late. I think lost 9-1 on Saturday. Judge hits a 3-run homer. Michael Kay says, the Yankees can now exhale. Their best player does it when they need it the most. They were down 5-0. He hit a homer to make it 5-3. What are we talking about? What am I watching? What am I listening to? He does it when they need it the most. Yankees can exhale. They're losing 5-3. And this was actually after Judge hits a homer. Wells gets a hit and Torres hits in a double play. And after the double play, he goes, double play by Torres, but the Yankees can exhale as their best player comes through. And what are you talking about? I know he's a homer. I know he's a shill. And God forbid he ever mentions the fact that this team's worth $7.5 billion and this roster is awful and they passed on Harper and Seager and Freeman and all of these guys. But the Yankees can exhale. It's just one of the dumber comments you can ever make. The team stinks. They're down 5-3 going to the eighth inning. They're not going to come back. You know they're probably going to lose the game once they're down two that late. Just an asinine, stupid comment by Kay, which absolutely drove me nuts. So Yankees play Monday. I wouldn't bet them. I wouldn't lay the -155. Rodon hasn't been great here. I mean, if you take 1.5 with the Rays, if anything, I would take the Rays. I got a feeling the Yankees win, but I'm not stepping in front of this Yankee team. Right? Why would you want to bet the Yankees right now and lay a price to do so? I'm not doing it. I will say a bet for this game, and this has been great over the past couple weeks, Aaron Judge to walk. Now, the batter props are not up yet. Aaron Judge has walked in every single game since July 10th. July 10th was the last time he didn't walk in a game. I mean, he walks every game. One of the games against the Orioles, he walked four times. And it makes sense. You got Austin Wells hitting behind you, and he's great. And why are we going to pitch to him? And even if it's not a full-out intentional walk, they're careful, and they just say, you know what? We'll throw stuff off the plate. We'll throw stuff in the dirt. If you swing, you swing and strike yourself out. If not, we'll go get the next guy. So Aaron Judge to walk. It's been around even money. I think that's a good play. We'll see if the Yankees can get back on track. The Red Sox now, and here's the other thing. Red Sox are playing right now, lead the Dodgers 2-0. The Yankees have 42 losses. The last team out as of right now in terms of the playoffs is the Red Sox with 44. The Yankees are no lock to make the playoffs. If you don't make some moves, if this continues, if you continue this losing 21 out of 31 or anything close to that, you're going to slide right out of the playoffs. Which, you know what, maybe would be the best thing for him to get rid of. I mean, I would say, hey, I'll get rid of Boone, get rid of Cashman, but I would have thought that years ago now. And, I mean, the problem is the owner. The problem is the owner doesn't spend any more than he needs to spend to keep the fans happy and just do as little as possible. So missing the playoffs, would that get him to spend? I don't know. I don't know that. And I don't know that I would get rid of Boone, get rid of Cashman. And I don't know, as much as they need to be replaced, I don't know if they're the problem. I think they're just more a symptom of the problem. So that's the baseball. Like I said, the Astros wipe away a big lead. Phillies in good shape. The Braves were playing well. They lose Fried and Albies. They're 8 out. I can't imagine they'd be buyers at the deadline. You might just say, you know what? We'll get in if we can. We should still get in the playoffs. And then if we make noise, it's gravy. It's house money year. But I don't know if you're going to sink assets into this team, because no Strider, no Acuna, now no Albies, no Fried until who knows how long. You just say, you know what? We'll hold pat. We'll get in. We'll see what happens. So a lot of teams bunched up here. Mets would make the playoffs if the playoffs started today. The Pirates with a good weekend. They're on the outside looking in barely. Diamondbacks on the outside in looking barely. So a lot of teams in the mix. I do think the Orioles here, -135 is still a good bet. I think they, even though they haven't played well, even though they have their issues, they have fewer issues than the Yankees here. We really need to get things in order here. If they're going to forget the division, if they're going to make the playoffs, because the Yankees are only two games clear of a playoff spot, at least in the loss column. So That's the baseball. Let's talk a little football with Jeff Schwartz. That is next. This is Should A Bet More Podcast. All right, we are back. Should A Bet More Podcast. A week or so away from the Hall of Fame game. Training camps are in session. Let's talk a little football. You can hear him on Fox Sports. Bear Bets Podcast. It is former NFL offensive lineman Jeff Schwartz. Jeff, thanks for coming on, man. I'm sure you are just so jealous right now that you're not out training camps, 100-degree weather, practicing football.
It actually got cooler in Charlotte, but about a week ago, Will, I was leaving the grocery store, and it was well over 100 degrees with the humidity and everything. And I thought to myself, man, I used to practice in this. This used to be something I did every day. And it got a little cooler now, so it's much nicer. But no, I don't miss any of it. It does feel like the start of training camp when one thing happens. The Chiefs have open practices, right? Open the fans. They go away to St. Joe's still. And part of the openness is fans get to record practice. And KC Sports Network like pays someone to do it. And so training camp officially starts when the Chiefs put out videos, not the Chiefs, their fans, of practices. So we get like actual practice. It feels like we're back, not in pads quite yet, but we're getting there, and it'll be here before we know it.
Yeah, I saw one tweet or one clip of Mahomes, I guess, threw a touchdown to Worthy in practice, and now everyone's looing. It was nice.
It was 60 yards. He was running to his left. He turned and threw the ball 60 yards in the air for a touchdown.
And that's an element they haven't had since Hill left. And Worthy, from what everyone says, he's not like the best route runner. He's not a complete receiver, but man, those home run balls, that's going to be a nice connection.
Look, all they need from him is, you know, is 7-8 of those this year. Like they don't need a ton. They don't need to, that's not their offense, but you know, just enough to scare a defense into changing their coverage for what they want to do. Like that's what it is. It's not like it's, they need him, Will, to be their offense, but they need enough to scare defenses into thinking that they can throw the ball deep again.
Yeah. It's almost like a basketball team that you need the 3-pointer to open up the layups and everything else in the paint. Before we get to some specific teams you think are overrated, underrated, things like that. I think most fans watch the game and they watch the ball. They watch the quarterback. They watch whoever has the ball. As a former offensive NFL lineman, I'm sure you watch the line. Do you feel like you can watch the line and handicap the game that way, where you pick up on things that most people aren't picking up on?
Yeah, I mean, I watch it all. I just watch it from inside out. You know, I watch it from looking at the snap to the center, the protection, and my eyes divert to where the ball's going to go. Especially with the angle of that we get now. I mean, you can't even really see the secondary all that well sometimes. So I'm looking up front first, and then I know when the ball should be released or what's happening. And you follow the ball, as we mostly do. But yeah, I mean, it's easy to pick up things in game. That's why I do the videos and try to educate people, because I can see things happening. And the reason I started doing a lot of the offensive line stuff isn't because I played. It's mostly because when I retired, I realized that everyone blames us for everything. It's always our fault as offensive linemen. And so I wanted to be a voice of reason to explain the game. It wasn't I want to take blame off of us and put blame somewhere else, but just say, hey, this is what happened on this play. Yeah, the offensive lineman made an error, but maybe it wasn't what you thought it was. Maybe it's something else. Maybe it was the quarterback's fault, the running back's fault. So my job is, I think, education, right? Educating people on what happens up front on the offensive line.
And how do you handicap that going into the game? Will you use that as as part of your handicap? I'm sure you will. And who is the best offensive line would you consider going into this year as a unit?
Well, look, I think you have to do that, Will, especially when you have such a mismatch. But I can't say mismatch between an offensive line and a defensive line. And I think a lot of that actually really is more for the defensive line dominating the offensive line, right? That to me feels more like where you get the edge, where you take a team total under, right, or a passing yard under, or just something to where you fade the offense because the offensive line is injured, is beat up, is not as not what you think it's going to be. So look, I think the Lions, it's really the same teams from last year. Lions are going to be good. The Browns are going to be good. The Chiefs, depending on left tackle, should be pretty good. The Texans are sneaky good. There's a lot of teams. I think the Rams are doing some reshuffling, can be really good. So it's sort of the same teams we've seen at the top. The Eagles can get the right guard situation figured out. They're going to be good for years and years to come. So there's plenty of teams, I think, entering the season with high hopes for the offensive line.
How about on the bad? How about teams where...
Jeez. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think that there's... you know, the Giants have spent a lot of money in their offensive line. They need some of those guys, Will, to I guess not money, the right word, the draft picks, right? They need some of those guys to really pan out. You know, the Titans were bad last year. I think that they've done a decent job trying to make it better, but we got to see how it works, right? With Latham there and Skronsky on that left side. And look, they have Bill Callahan. It's going to be fine, but he teaches things differently than the previous coach. It might take a little bit of time to sort of get up to speed there. I don't think Pittsburgh is going to be bad. They just have new pieces, right? New center, new right tackle, left tackle still very young, hasn't played a lot of football in his life. So bad might be the wrong word to use for them, but just not, maybe it takes time to grow there. That kind of comes to off the top of my head of some teams that I'm looking at. And again, fading them or this early in the season, probably not wise. I'll tell you one other team that is interesting. You know, the Cowboys have a new left tackle and new center. Now they have a Hall of Fame right guard and an all pro left guard. So it might not matter, but those are two new pieces, important pieces, Will, on a really important offensive line. It's something to really keep an eye on, with those new players in those positions.
How about teams just in general? You're either higher on, lower on teams you think are overrated, underrated going into the season.
Colorado. Oh no, wait, wrong podcast. I thought if I scream Colorado, we get more viewers. I think it's so sharp now with the numbers being set for win totals, Will. I feel like it's really difficult in the NFL and college football to find teams that are overlooked, right? Because you know, it's just, we have so much information in these teams now. Quarterback play, we know, is so important that it's hard to be like, you know, that team's at 4.5 wins. They're winning 8. It doesn't feel that. I'll give you a couple of teams that I think are just, I look at them as an over potential. The Rams are one of them. It's 8.5, I believe, right now, Will. All Sean McVay has done there is win a lot of football games if Matthew Stafford is healthy. As I mentioned, they improved their offensive line. Yeah, they lost Donald, but they went and drafted two linemen pretty early in the draft. They're going to win 9, 10, 11 games. Like, they're a very good football team. And a year last year, remember, where we, not we, but other people thought they would take a step back. They didn't at all. I mean, he can coach. The other team that I think is probably an overplay for me is the Cardinals. It's jumped down to...
six and a half, juice to the over.
Yeah. I think they're going over. I know those are two teams in the same division, but I think they showed last year when Kyler Murray was back in the lineup, how much better they were. I think Gannon, you know, everyone mocked him for the hire and sort of his press conference. That feels like when that happens, that coach ends up being good. It's happened often. The other team, I'll give one more team, is in like sort of a surprise. The Panthers is, you get a 4.5, it's pretty juice, but over 5.5, they have a good enough roster, Will, right? In a division that's just okay, a fourth place schedule, new coaching staff. I like what they've done with the front office there. That feels like an over team to me, that you look at that low number and you go over.
You still have some hope for Bryce Young?
He's never going to be an all-pro Pro Bowl level player, but if you get him average with the roster they have and the division they're in, 7 wins, 8 wins, I think is doable for them.
Yeah, I had Adam Chernoff from Right Angle Sports on, I don't know, a month or so ago, and he made the case for them too as his sleeper team to go over to win the division, coach of the year for Canales, just because he likes Canales, and he compared it to Urban Meyer and Trevor Lawrence's rookie year, where you just throw it out. They weren't coached well for whatever reason. Frank Reich was considered a really good coach 3 or 4 years ago, but you know, you talk to the people that watch the film, and you're probably one of these guys that would know that, like, they were so outcoached schematically. Yes. Guys running the same routes, just nobody open anywhere, no spacing. So I don't know, that maybe that is a fair comparison.
That's a fair comparison. And you know, Canales was brought in specifically for that. You know, to fix him. And we saw what he did with Baker Mayfield. Like, he can coach. It's a different job as a head coach, but you know, we know he can coach offense. We saw what he did last year.
Well, any awards appeal to you? Any MVP, coach of the year, and any of that jump off the page or no?
So coach of the year, I wrote an article for Fox Sports on this. You know, the favorite doesn't really win often in this award. So I look at like sort of a lot of long shots. Sean McVay is a name that I put up there. I think it was +2,500 as a coach of the year. It has to be a coach that overachieves, right? It's never Andy Reid. Andy Reid has won one coach of the year in his career. No. Yeah, one, I think, in his career. Tomlin's won zero, Will. Like, it's not about the best coach. It's whoever exceeds expectations in a given year based on roster and what we think about them. The Rams feel like they could certainly be in that category for me. Other ones that I mean, if the Texans end up being the one or two seed, I think that's a little rich for them. I mean, DeMeco Ryans feels like I could be up in that spot. Do you have one you like? Coach of the Year to me is such a tough one to wager on before the season starts.
I'm interested to see how, and you're betting on humans, how they're going to think. What are they going to think? Will Harbaugh get the credit if this team wins 10 games or 11 games or makes the playoffs? Or will people say, hey, they had Herbert, they had talent anyway, they were in the playoffs that the prior years, last year was a throwaway. Harbaugh is one that comes to mind. And will Salah get the credit? Because the Jets haven't been in the playoffs a while. Now, their over-under is 9.5. That's, to your point, that's usually not the guy that wins, but the long drought in the playoffs, you keep Aaron Rodgers' ego in check. I think the Jets are going to be really good if everything goes well, which, look, it's the Jets. Who knows? But if they win 12 games, will Salah get the credit? Media likes him. I don't know. Those are a couple, at least, that come to mind.
Yeah, Salah and the Jets are interesting. I have no feel for the Jets, man. I have no idea what they're going to be this year. It feels like all or nothing, where they're either like win 11 games or win 6 games. You're like, I don't, 9-8 feels unlikely to me, for what they can be. So I don't know what they are this year. They're the one team I know when we get to doing our show again, we'll talk a lot of Jets. I don't know. I just don't know what they're going to be, man. I think there's just so much unknown. And when you have a losing organization, it is really hard to overcome that. And the Jets have been losers for a long time, Will. And it takes a special force. And maybe that force is Aaron Rodgers. Dan Campbell did it in Detroit. He like forced them out of their losingness, losing ways, whatever you want to say, losing culture. But Rodgers has 1 year to do it. Dan Campbell did it over 3 or 4 years, right? 3 years? Is it 3 years he did it? 2 years? So it's a lot of pressure to make it happen in this one season for them.
Yeah, I think the thing that would give me comfort is like, hey, everything went wrong last year. You basically had your offensive line was a disaster. You don't have all of your quarterbacks last year are never probably going to throw another pass in the NFL. Trevor Siemian, Zach Wilson, who's the UConn kid, Tim Boyle.
Yes.
He still won 7 games. Now you at least have a decent backup in Taylor. Even if Rodgers is like, I don't know, the 8th best quarterback, the 12th best quarterback, that roster is really good. So that's why I have confidence in them. But I get your point for sure.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna stay away from all Jets related wagers this year.
Anything college? Everyone says very top heavy. Georgia, Ohio State, Oregon, then everybody else. Is that kind of where you're at?
Just don't. No one talk about Oregon, please. Just be quiet. Let Oregon play football quietly by themselves. Enough Oregon talk. Okay, we did this last year, Will. I don't like it. I like to just fly under the radar, but it shows you where Oregon's at. So to me, college football, I don't know if I take any over wagers every year. Any week, I took Utah last year over that it didn't win because every single player got hurt in their team. I go the under route. And two teams sort of at the top that have a high win total that have kind of caught my attention. Florida State's at 9.5. They lost a lot of players, Will. Like a lot. Like returning production is a thing. And they went with DJU, a quarterback who didn't complete 60% of passes last year in a run heavy offense. I don't buy Florida State. Now I know they're in the ACC and I get that the conference is not what it used to be. And maybe, you know, that's a part of the equation here where you look at the schedule and you're like, yeah, pretty doable. Right. They play Clemson at home. They go to Miami, they get Carolina, they get Notre Dame. I mean, I would lean to 9-3 pretty heavily with them. The other team that I think is in the same boat is Michigan, right? Their win total is 9.5, Will. I was doing some research today on them for Big Ten Media Day next week. You know, they have one returning starter on offense, their tight end, and 3 on defense. And not only that, unlike Florida State, their head coach left, their strength coach left, like a lot of infrastructure left out of Michigan. So it's all new, unproven quarterback. when you add, you know, you have a schedule that includes a couple, you know, new teams, tougher teams. I think they're going under the 9.5. I've made no wagers for overs so far. The one team that I'm looking at right now would be Arizona over 7.5. Yeah, they lost Jed Fish, but they retained the quarterback and their wide receiver. It might be the best wide out in the country, Will. I think that with the Big 12 schedule and Brandon, we know, can coach, Arizona over 7.5 is something I will probably make pretty soon.
How do you like this new era of college football? Forget the off the field NIL and all that stuff, but how do you like the 12-team playoff, the new conferences? How would you do in terms of a quiz on what schools and which conference?
You know what's helped me is the new NCAA football game. I've been able to sample where these schools are at. My Pac-12 being blown to shreds is not fun. You lose the regionality of the sport, which is getting more national. So understand why the networks did this, but it's something that I'm never going to like. I don't think I will embrace it. Obviously you have to adapt and things have changed, but you know, you got what, 18 Big Ten teams, you got 16 SEC teams. The Big 12 wants to add more teams. I think they're at 18 right now. If I'm doing that correct as well. It's a lot of moving parts. Well, the 12-team playoff to me is not something that we needed. I don't think we needed that, right? The goal is to find a champion. The goal, it's not a participation tournament. And I actually think that we're going to get less of like TCU and Washington. And Washington sneak up on anyone, but sort of out of nowhere, right? Like they weren't a playoff team and all of a sudden they were. Because you have to win 3 games if you have a bye to get to win a championship. 4 if you don't. There are a lot of teams in this country, Will, that don't have the depth to win 4 games against the top 12 teams in the country. I mean, right now, there's probably 5 teams, right? You look at Georgia, just depth and talent. Georgia, Ohio State, Oregon, Texas, Alabama. I think Alabama, by the way, plus 800 to win the SEC. That number feels way too high. Cam DeBoer is, what, 104-11 as a head coach. Tremendous, in his career? And even if you filter out the Sioux Falls, I think it's like 37-9. Like, it's not like he loses ever. They're still going to be good. That's it. Like, I mean, you can't, a Big 12 champion, AC champion is not winning those 4 games in a row. Let's say Penn State gets in. Drew Aller, they're not winning 4 games in a row against those opponents. Sorry. Ole Miss might get in this year. They're probably not winning 4 games against the teams like that. To me, it narrows the champion down even more. It's fun. I'll watch all the games. I'll wager on them, I would imagine, but it doesn't make me excited for a 12-team playoff. The end of seasons will feel different now, which is not a bad thing, right? Because games that, you know, the Michigan-Ohio State game sort of was like a playing game for a playoff spot. Not anymore, right? The loser of that game can still be in the postseason. So it just changes kind of the end of season dynamics too with games and how they're played.
Yeah, and it's going to, when these playoffs come around and we have those like Saturdays where we have NFL games on Saturday and we have college football playoffs, and college basketball will be back, it's going to be overwhelming how much sports we're going to have.
Yeah, I will be quite honest, Will. Unless my friend posts the plays on social media, the daily plays for college basketball that I'd like to wager against, I'll probably stay away from college basketball until like February, like I do every year. I know you don't. You sent me your wagers every night. Not every night, but you've sent me them on occasion. And I'm going to miss the WNBA right now. I've made a killing. The WNBA, I've been a killing on it, man. I basically just go like, Caitlin Clark didn't play that well one night. Okay, take 2 units on her the next night and she just dominates. Like, she's not going to play 2 bad games in a row. And she crushes the bad teams. And then they inflated Angel Reese's rebound numbers, 13.5. I hit the under 3 or 4 times now on that. That's a lot of rebounds, 13.5 in a 40-minute game. So WNBA has been very fruitful for me.
Did you watch the All-Star game?
Yeah, so funny, a buddy of mine I do radio with on Fox Sports, Brian Noe, we do a show with Bill Krakenberger. I didn't know Bill. He texted me before the game, was like, hey, I'm taking the first quarter over 48.5. I'm like, I'll tell you, why not? It didn't hit. I think it was a point short. But then the second, third, and fourth quarters all went over. It was over at halftime and over full game.
Ugh.
So the only time that we didn't hit, and the first, dude, they were guarding Sabrina. They were guarding Caitlin Clark, like double teaming her.
Yes.
It was insane. Why does this league?
I don't know.
I know, but. Well, no, because it wasn't. It didn't have to do with that in the All-Star game. I think that Team USA just didn't want Caitlin Clark to get her shine, I guess, in this game. I don't know. It's an All-Star game. They were playing hard as heck, too. Jeez. And then after the game, Caitlin Clark said, you know, they were going to put me in, and they didn't because I wanted, you know, my teammate to keep playing because she was having a historic night, and they just still don't like her for some reason. I don't understand it. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, there's reasons there. There's probably multiple reasons, and it's political, and it's activism, and all that stuff. I don't know, but no, I totally agree. She's so likable. She handles everything well. She takes it all in stride.
She scores a ton of points. Like rebounds and assists over every night for her is going to be something that's going to hit. Once Olympics are over and they come back in August, I know it's football season, Will. I think she comes back with like a vengeance. She's going to have a month off. It's her first month off from playing ball in like a year, basically, right? Because college basketball went right into the draft, went right into preseason camp.
Plus her off-court stuff. She does. Yes. Busy with that stuff, she can finally breathe. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so I think she comes back and makes a killing. So last thing, I know you probably want to let me go. I keep talking too much.
No, keep going.
Golf just ended, man. It's so unsatisfying wagering on golf. It just is.
Not for our buddy Bear, who had Xander Schauffele for I think a decent amount here.
He did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe he'll split it with us. Maybe it'll be, you know, he's had a very good show bet. He could split it around the show.
He's had a very good year.
Yeah,
cross sport parlays.
I know.
Okay. So we spent all year talking about Scheffler being the best golfer, but Xander won two majors. Isn't that like the point of golf, to win the majors? Shouldn't he end the year as a better golfer? I hot take, embrace debate on first take, but shouldn't we say Xander had a better year? I know that Scheffler won more tournaments. But Xander won the important tournaments.
Yeah, and DeChambeau did well on LIV. So, look, Scheffler can't win every week, but your point is well taken. Any baseball takes? I know you bet baseball, too. I know you won't. Do you bet against the White Sox? Sammy and I were texting about this Saturday. Do you bet against the White Sox every night?
Yeah, so I bet on them every night. So what I do is I take the run line against them every night. The run line against them, the Marlins, and the Rockies. The Rockies has been less fruitful. The Marlins, I'm up right now. The White Sox, I actually went to a unit and a half after the All-Star because I looked at like where I'm at. So I'm up. I mean, I'm up significant. I mean, I'm probably, because the last two nights, you know, I'm probably up, I don't know, 10 units on them so far on the run line. The hard part with them is that, you know, the run line's always, you know, minus something, right? Minus 105, minus 110, minus 115. The Marlins and Rockies, the run line can have a plus number. So I don't have to win as much on those to make money, essentially, because the Marlins fade. I'm up and I'm 32-35. So it's like, you know, they're playing the Mets right now, and it's plus 110 for the Mets to win on the run line. But the White Sox have been, oh my God, it's been so. I've also live bet them when they're winning 5-0 in the third inning. Like, just take like live bet them. And it's been so much money this year, dude.
And that's all you do. You just bet against those teams, and that's pretty much your betting diet.
Those three. Yeah. Yeah. Those three every night. And you know, I'll sprinkle in every now and then on some other stuff, but that's about it. Yeah. So I don't even watch. I don't watch those games. I just, you know, take a peek at the scores throughout the night. But like today, so the Marlins and Rockies have both not covered the run line for 2 days in a row. So I think like today I would imagine, you know, three straight times they don't cover is unlikely. So we'll see. Hopefully I win some money today.
Last one, hardest player you ever had to block. Who's the best player you ever had?
Oh, Julius Peppers by far. Oh,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We're getting to the point now where some of these guys are obviously Hall of Fame. We're going to the Hall of Fame, and he's very, very good. I was glad I was able to survive against him a couple times, but when I was a rookie and a young player doing scout team every day, he kicked my ass, man. Kicked my ass.
Was it quickness?
Everything. He's 6'5", 275, 280. He could go around you, through you, and inside of you. He could just do so many different things. You know, being able to do three things well makes you a Hall of Famer. A lot of guys had to do one thing well, maybe two, but doing three puts us in a bind because you can't prepare for much, right? You have to just go out there and just sort of, you know, have what's the better to put it, like a plan, but also you have to know all the counters to what might happen poorly. When you face a guy with one move, that's much easier. Two moves, sure. If he goes upfield, he goes inside, cool, I'm ready for that. But a guy that can just hunt move you, go around you, go through you, you can't prepare for something on a given rep. So it's hard, man.
Wow, yeah, and a hell of a basketball player too. I remember he played basketball, what? I think at college, right? At UNC, he played basketball?
Yeah, oh yeah.
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 Jeff?
He's a good athlete.
Jeff, I appreciate the time, man. Hopefully we'll do this down the road. Let everyone know they can find your stuff.
Yeah, so Bear Bets, as we mentioned, will be back, I would imagine, football season. I think it's a football gambling podcast, Will. I don't know. I think we'll be back at some point. And then my Jeff Schwartz is Smarter Than You podcast. That will be back at some point. Take a little summer break. I got Big Ten Media Days next week. And college football is here. NFL is here. I'm excited for all of it. And who's ever playing the White Sox? The Royals right now. Dude, this is free money. They're 27-73, Will. They're going to be what's the least amount of wins? 52, 54?
Oh yeah, I think so. I think 50. We're one of those Tigers teams in like 2003, won like right around 50. I'll have to look it up, but they're gonna flirt with it, especially if they trade Crochet.
They have to trade him, right?
I think you have to listen. I think you absolutely have to listen.
This is the problem with baseball. It's like I type in least amount of wins in Major League Baseball. It's like in 1899, the Cleveland Spiders had 20 wins. Baseball, come on, man.
Yeah, you got to consolidate better.
Yeah. So, they probably have to trade him, right? So
he's only 25 though. You figure, hey, we got to be good at some point. I think you have to listen. I think that's
the 47. Well, the Tigers in 2003 won 43 games.
There you go.
Baltimore won 47-18. The Tigers won 47-19.
Wow. So 43-119. My goodness. Yeah. I don't remember them being that bad. I knew they were bad. I don't remember that.
47 games back. And I think the Mets' first season was not 62, right? They went 40-120.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah.
Jeff, appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
All right. Thanks to Jeff Schwartz. We will be back Wednesday. Rate, review, subscribe. See you then.